Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Welcome to the ESPN Player College Football Show in association with Gridiron. I'm Simon Clancy, along as always with the editor Matthew Sherry. Matt, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very good, Si. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. It is Conference Championship weekend, and we'll get into that in a little while. But Matt, I wanted to pitch something to you this week, really. Two things, really. Question one, the rankings came out on Tuesday evening, and for those that didn't see them, it's pretty much as you were. The biggest question mark, the biggest question mark was always going to be around what happened with Oklahoma and Ohio State. Would Ohio State jump up, as some people predicted, as high as 5 over Oklahoma after their 62-39 win over Michigan, or would they end up in 6th place given the fact that they'd lost to Purdue by 4 touchdowns, squeaked past Nebraska at home, and squeaked past Maryland in overtime, and essentially when Maryland went for 2. As it turned out, they went to 6, which I think is the right call, Matt. But it was interesting to see that Michigan stayed at 7 and UCF, unbeaten UCF, could only get as high as 8. 2 lost Michigan. And essentially, you know, the committee clearly valuing a catastrophic injury, the one that we saw with Mackenzie Milton, over a convincing defeat, would you say?
I think so. And I think it's a decision made, really, to protect the quality of the bowl games, because that's the only explanation for me. Because there's no way UCF should be below any 2-loss team. That's the reality of the season they've had, but also the second season they've had. They were unbeaten last year, beat an Auburn team who beat both contenders of the national championship game in a bowl game. So yeah, and truthfully, it's not really fair, but I can kind of understand it in terms of they wanting to pair the bowl matchups as best they can. And UCF, it's just awful, isn't it? And I if Milton hadn't got injured, I would have wanted UCF to be ranked 5th. I felt like it was trending that way anyway, and I'd have loved to have seen them in it. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily have agreed with them being ranked 5th, but I would have wanted to see it, if that makes sense. I think Oklahoma deserved their spot at number 5, but yeah, I feel like that is what's happened. The committee will deny that, but I find it hard to believe that conversation wasn't had in the room.
And it goes back to the point that Sonny Dykes mentioned earlier in the season, that you know, having lost as SMU coach, having lost to UCF and to Michigan, and saying there was barely any difference between the two teams, that actually there's only a certain proportion of teams that can win the national championship, therefore why are we bothering to do it in the first place? It just seems ludicrous. Obviously the Mackenzie Milton injury has completely changed things, and UCF clearly, even if they got into the playoff, are now not going to win the national championship, given the fact that Milton accounted for, I think it was 79 touchdowns over the last season and 3 quarters. So, but it does seem very, very unfortunate. The thing I really wanted to touch on, Matt, I suppose, is that Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports wrote this very interesting column this week, which was essentially the fact that the playoff doesn't need expansion. Ultimately, it needs reform. And the genesis of it was that, you know, college football essentially is wasting its time this weekend with a kind of a relic that is conference championship weekend. It's old, it's uncompetitive, there's no entertainment, and it's really not even a revenue, you know, generator, because what's happening is these conference games are now moved to NFL cities, essentially, you know, Dallas and Houston's and places like that. So they're being taken out of the hands of the college towns where money is pumped through when people come in for the games, those sorts of things. And actually, you can argue against playoff expansion because there would be too many games. But if you scrap the conference championships and instead you started an 18 playoff this weekend, this would be Wetzel's slate of games for the opening round of the current postseason, which would be Alabama against Georgia. This is what it is this weekend. It's Alabama, Georgia, obviously. And really, Alabama only has to not lose by 30 points?
I mean, maybe 30. Because yeah, even with how dominant Alabama have been this season, if they lost by 25 this week, It's still a loss by 25 to Georgia.
If Georgia won 50-20, I still don't think Alabama would drop out of the top four.
And I don't think they should, because they've been too good. I mean, they've won every game by at least 20 points this season.
I mean, you got number two Clemson against number 22 Pittsburgh. And Clemson really, you know, again, Clemson has to not lose by more than two touchdowns, realistically.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, and they advance as the number two seed. I don't think they'd fall any further. Pitt obviously can't advance. Number three ranked Notre Dame are idle. They're obviously advancing. You've got number five Oklahoma against number 13. Texas Oklahoma obviously needs to win. Georgia needs to lose. And then they need a debate with Ohio State or have Ohio State lose to advance. Texas can't advance. And you've got Ohio State against Northwestern. Ohio State needs to win. Georgia needs to lose. Then they have the debate with Oklahoma or have Oklahoma lose. Northwestern can't advance. Then number seven UCF against unranked Memphis in a meaningless game. Number 13 Washington against number 16 in the Pac-12. Number 16 Utah in the Pac-12 conference championship. That game also is utterly meaningless. You know, but if you scrapped, and Wetzel's point was, if you scrapped the conference championships, this is what you'd have instead. You know, you'd have five automatic bids for the major conferences, three at-large bids and home sites for the first round. You'd have number eight Washington against number one Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Number seven UCF against number two Clemson in Clemson. Number six Ohio State against number three Notre Dame in South Bend. And number five Oklahoma against number four Georgia between the hedges. I mean, that is a astonishingly great slate of games, isn't it? And you know, if your answer is the former over the latter, i.e. we want conference championships over the games that I've just read out, then I think you're either a bowl director terrified of the playoff being staged in, you know, electric, historic on-campus stadiums whilst generating enough economic activity to keep the towns afloat for a year, or, well, I mean, you're an asleep-at-the-wheel conference commissioner, because I just can't imagine anybody thinking that the games that we're going to see this weekend are better than that slate of four games. I mean, you have eight teams with legitimate claims to a playoff spot playing each other, or you can have Clemson against Pittsburgh. It's your choice. I mean, what's stopping us getting to Wetzel's promised land, as it were?
I guess teams protecting. Well, I'm really not sure actually by this point. I was going to say teams protecting their own conferences, but Wetzel's theory is that, you know, you'd have representation from the main conferences every year in the playoff, which I actually think would be great. I mean, I find it ridiculous that it isn't the case already. As much as one conference can have a down year, I certainly would like to see Washington-Alabama this week, even though Washington have flattered to deceive a lot of the year. It gives the Pac-12 some representation, but also they've just come off a great win against Washington State. They're really, I mean, I think it'll happen. That's ultimately, I think, how he describes it will happen. I think it takes some figuring out scheduling-wise, because, you know, it's tricky. I mean, you could conceivably have two unbeaten teams one year or two one-loss teams in the same conference. But then I guess if you get that, they're more likely than not to be in the top eight as well. It's a better system. I can't argue. I think this is a year where this is a rare season with three unbeaten teams, and that's kind of why we're in this position where, like Clemson, for example, probably Alabama can just afford to lose this week and still get in.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen every year, and in fact, most years, you don't have any unbeaten teams. So I do think this is a perfect storm to write that article, but I also agree wholeheartedly with it, because I think one of the things stopping a playoff is this championship weekend. But alternatively, Si, I mean, we could easily rid the scheduled regular season schedule of one of these cupcake games that every team plays two or three of a year as well. So I think there's multiple ways to do it, so you could still keep the sanctity of... I think having a conference champion is a good thing, because, you know, for example, with Michigan now, I'm as disappointed at the fact that they're not going to win the Big 12 as I am... the Big 10, sorry, as I am at the fact that they're not going to be in the playoff, because I didn't think they'd win the playoff anyway. But, you know, they've not won the Big Ten for several years, and it would have been nice to win that title and give this Jim Harbaugh era a trophy. So I do think personally I'd rather a system where they took one of the fat of the regular season games out. But by the same account, if it's a choice between what we have this week and what Wetzel's pitching, I would much rather have Wetzel's pitch as well.
I mean, for people saying that, oh, conference championship weekend, you know, you need to win the conference, we need to decide, you know, from the two divisions of each of those conferences who's going to win. Well, there's seven conference championships seven conference championship games this weekend. Try saying that after a Pret A Manger sandwich. But essentially, there's only one of them that's in any doubt heading into conference championship weekend, in inverted commas. You know, Alabama won the SEC. Clemson won the ACC. Oklahoma won the Big 12. Washington won the Pac-12. There's no debate here. All these games were settled on the field. You know, technically, Ohio State and Northwestern are both tied in the Big Ten, I think 8-1 league records. But ultimately, this is a product of a scheduling imbalance, isn't it? Because Northwestern lost all three of its non-conference games, including to Akron. They also played a weaker schedule. You know, there's 100 ways to break a tie, and Ohio State would pretty much win them all. This isn't hard, is it? I mean, this isn't a difficult thing to do. This could be very easily, you know, I think people would say that history would say that we need to carry on doing it. Well, history schmistry, really. It's the, you know, surely it should be better for the fans, because ultimately they're
Is the biggest argument against it, again, that the team who won the national championship last year were not playing this week? You know, Alabama didn't play in the SEC championship game last year because they lost to Auburn and therefore lost the West, and Auburn played Georgia and Alabama won the national championship. So if there's ever an argument against the whole sanctity of these games, then
play it on
last
the field.
Season is absolutely it.
Play it on the field. And also, look, these are huge money generators. That 8-team playoff would generate massive and far greater television contracts, not to mention bigger ticket sales in bigger stadiums. You 100,000, 105,000 in Tuscaloosa, for example, you know, at higher prices because there's more demand. And like I said earlier, a lot of that money would stay in these places that actually care about college football and not end up in faraway NFL towns like Dallas and Houston and Miami and, you know, wherever. It just seems to me to be ridiculous.
I mean, I remember me and you saying, Si, last year after leaving Bryant Denny, you know, what a stadium that is. It would be awesome if it hosted a Super Bowl.
Oh,
well, actually,
absolutely.
It would be awesome if it hosted the biggest games for its own championship. You know, even a quarterfinal, and I don't think a semifinal will ever happen because they've got that rotation of the Rose Bowl and all these games, and the Rose Bowl's the exception. I personally think the Rose Bowl should play host to the national championship game every single year. I mean, but you know, it would be awesome to have at least one playoff game in these teams' home stadiums.
I mean, the atmosphere for on-campus playoff games would be incredible.
Yeah, it would be insane. They're missing a huge trick. I mean, you know, you send game day to every single one as well. You separate the games out if you can. I mean, that may not be possible, but you could certainly have a game day style presence at each of those towns. It would be absolutely electric.
It's not like ESPN don't have enough people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it makes too much sense. And frankly, if ESPN don't have enough people, then there's a couple of Brits over here that'll happily roll over to one of them as well.
But nobody's ever attended an NFL playoff game at Lambeau or at Heinz Field or at Mile High Stadium or anywhere, frankly. And, you know, surveyed the crowd pre-kickoff and the frenzy and the atmosphere and the excitement of a playoff game and thought, God, I wish I'd spent $1,500 to fly to Miami or to Atlanta for the, a kind of an antiseptic playoff game.
Yeah.
Those games are at those stadiums because they are the great venues of American sport. And when those teams get to the playoffs, they deserve to host that home game. And it's such a shame that Tigers, you know, the Clemson fans won't see Dabo Swinney and Trevor Lawrence and those guys run down the hill, you know, hosting a playoff game. And the same in Tuscaloosa and the same wherever else around the country. It just seems, you know, Columbus and all these great stadiums, everybody's missing out.
And it gets away from, you know, I'm writing a lot of history of the game type stuff at the moment, and college football always saw itself and still does as the heart and soul of the game and the purest form of the game, and certainly in the past that was more. But this gets away from that. This gets into the, you know, when you're playing it at Atlanta Stadium, as great as that stadium is, it's just everything that college football isn't about. I mean, we said that ourselves, Si. We went to that stadium a week after going to Alabama Stadium last year, and we were like, well, yeah, it's obviously incredible. It's like a town inside of a stadium, but give me the Alabama one. Give me that Michigan State one we saw a couple of weeks ago, which is not one anybody talks about, but it had a heart and soul to it, didn't it? And you want the college games played in those stadiums.
I mean, look, in this year's first round of the playoff, four teams, including Georgia, can either not play or lose by a respectable score and still advance to the semifinals. Nine teams can win this weekend and not advance at all. And this is the system. I mean, the system is an ass.
I mean, would we... what you could even potentially do is... I mean, this would never happen, but because of the money made from these kind of big meetings between an Alabama and a Florida State, and you play two games, you could even just play only games in your own conference for the regular season. Mm. And then it creates this unbelievable scenario where you're playing teams you've never yet played. I guess the only negative with that is it takes away some of the rivalry games. But could you have one rivalry weekend where you play a team from a different conference? I mean, I think really there is a way to draw all this up that they're too far down the road with what they've got, but there's probably a much better system somewhere that I'm sure someone could come up with. But Wetzel's idea sounds a good one, and Wetzel's probably one of my favourite sports writers in the US as well. So,
do you think it's history that's holding us back and tradition that's holding us back?
Yeah, and it always has been. That's why it took us so long to get to the point of a playoff. But at the end of the day, you know, you're 4 or 5 years into a system that's much better than what preceded it. The national championship game was a system that was better than what preceded that, in which a committee just decided the national champion. So eventually I think it gets to a better system. But, you know, nothing happens quickly with this, because, and it's because of the negative of sport, in that it's all profiting off the fans in the stadium, but the fans in the stadium don't decide what happens. It's guys in a boardroom with suits on, and that often means that things, litigation and everything else, makes it take more time than we'd like.
That's the playoffs put to right, so we'll get to the conference games this weekend shortly. Some coaching situations that have happened since we last spoke. Paul Johnson stepped down as Georgia Tech head coach, 189 career wins, ranked fourth amongst active FBS coaches. School announced yesterday that he will step down after the season after 40 years of coaching. Yellow Jackets' job's quite an interesting one, isn't it? Because, it's a ripe recruiting area. They've won a national championship in the past. The great Ken Swilling-led team under Bobby Ross. This is not a bad job at all, is it, for somebody to come in at Tech?
No, but it's probably as close to the richest recruiting grounds that you can get. And as much as you've got Georgia on your doorstep, it's not like, you know, there's a limit to how many players a year that you can recruit. I think it's a great job. I find it fascinating with Georgia Tech, where they go in terms of, are they going to change the style of the triple option, and are they going to move into something totally different? And I think that's a fascinating question to be answered, because that'll dictate who's going to get the job.
Interestingly, I saw that Ken Wisenhunt, the Chargers offensive coordinator, obviously played at Georgia Tech, is the kind of the top candidate on the names of certainly of the fans on message boards and things. Clemson offensive coordinator Tony Elliott and Alabama offensive line coach and former Tech player Brent Key. But if they do keep it the same way with that triple option, then Jeff Munkin, who runs the triple option for Army, is also touted as a potential who could take over there. What do you think about the biggest news yesterday really was the ongoing all-day decision by Jeff Brohm as to whether or not he would leave and go to Louisville. He was head coach. He was obviously played at Louisville. His father played at Louisville. His father coached at Louisville. His grandfather coached at Louisville. He has a house in Louisville. He is Louisville through and through. And when the job came, he turned it down to stay at Purdue. There was a kind of an ongoing battle yesterday between the two sort of rival newspapers of the area, with the Purdue newspaper saying that Brohm was absolutely going to stay, the Louisville paper saying he's absolutely going to leave. In the end, he opted to stay at Purdue. And Purdue, I read last night, Stuart Mandel had tweeted that Purdue have 5 four-star and above ranked players as part of their class coming through next year, which is obviously a big reason why. And he certainly cultivated that area and starting to turn that recruiting around, and that was shown in the results that we've seen this year, notably the Ohio State victory. His high school, Trinity in Louisville, cancelled classes today because a bomb threat was made against the school on social media because of Brohm's decision to turn them down. He attended Trinity, as did all his brothers. His father is an assistant coach with the team. It speaks to the incredible nature of college football that a lot of people don't really see, just the passion, the intensity. And I'm not saying that threatening to bomb a school is either passion or intensity, because it's not. It's lunacy. But you can understand why people in an area just got so fixated on. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is fascinating because this was the most obvious coaching match of any in any sport that I can ever remember. It's not just that they're from Louisville. I mean, they basically are Louisville in terms of the whole family is like in
the royal
area,
family, really, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's almost like you thought to yourself when Jeff Brohm started coaching, you know, that was his dream job. I don't think it says a lot for what the Louisville job is.
No.
And that's one of those areas where it's a lot of older boosters and it's difficult. It's a difficult situation in places like that sometimes. I also think what you've alluded to is key. I mean, Jeff Brohm is building something with Purdue. I mean, for me, they could easily become a power in the Big Ten. You've got Rondale Moore, who is one of the most dynamic young players I've seen in college football in a long time. You've got, as you say, for their standards, an incredible recruiting class that they're building this year. And you just wonder, if you were sitting in Jeff Brohm's shoes, do you really want to start all over again, even for that job? And this is a guy, actually, I think, this isn't someone who I just think will be a great college head coach. I think he could be an NFL coach as well. So he's going to have opportunities again. I'm sure that if he wanted to get the Louisville job down the line, it could come up. But it feels like with Rondale Moore, I think, as a freshman, and, you know, you want to see that through with some great players.
Absolutely.
And keep building the class. It was a tough decision. I mean, an unenviable and enviable decision in many ways, because it's a great position to be in, but also a very tricky call. And great for Purdue that he stayed, because that's a program that could do with this, and a program who also put that beating on Ohio State that looks better a lot better now even than it did then. So I just think there's something special about that this year with the kid who had cancer and everything like that. It feels like they've built a community feel there. That's the kind of thing that really makes college football great. So I think it's awesome that Brohm is sticking around to try and see it through and take them on a little bit further.
This is the ESPN Player College Football Podcast, brought to you in association with Gridiron. I'm Simon Clancy. Matthew Sherry, the editor, is with me. Let's, Matt, get into the games this weekend. We've already kind of put Championship Weekend to bed in terms of what it means. But in terms of the actual games themselves on the field, let's start with the biggest game of all, probably the biggest game of the season, which is number one Alabama against number four Georgia. How do you see this one playing out? Because for me, I think Georgia might well be the second best team in the country and the team that could really give Alabama a hard time. They're 10.5-point underdogs, but there are chinks in the Alabama armor. I know everybody talks about how great they are, but, you know, they've started very slowly the last two or three weeks, struggled against the Citadel, struggled last week to get out early. They've also struggled against the run a little bit over the last few weeks. And special teams, I think they've missed five extra points. They've had a number of field goal misses. They had a punt block last week against Auburn. These are areas with which, you know, with Mecole Hardman in the return game for Georgia, who is a threat to go to the house at any point. Georgia have got great, outstanding, I think, as a unit, their receivers in terms of blocking
and
the run game are outstanding. And with DeAndre Swift, who's just a, you know, looks a superstar in the making and pretty much a superstar already made, it feels like they have the sort of game that could really, you know, could really push Alabama. Plus, the fact that it's back at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, home of the national championship last year, where Georgia lost to Alabama in overtime. There's the revenge factor. Jake Fromm, a year older. It should be a really good game and one that really sees Alabama pushed into the fourth quarter, I think, for the first time this season.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I often look at these Alabama games and a lot of the time, what seems to happen is teams hang with them for a spell. I mean, that doesn't always happen. They've blown a lot of teams out early as well. But late in the season, you often see teams hang with them, and then in the third quarter, fourth quarter, they just have superior athletes, and that's what it comes down to, because they've built up all these ludicrous recruiting classes year after year after year after year. And actually, Alabama are on course for maybe the greatest recruiting class of all time in the upcoming year, which is dreadful news for anybody who likes other teams in college football. But actually, Georgia are one of the only teams that can stand up to that. Athletically, they have as good an athlete as Alabama do. And they're also one of the few teams that are well-rounded enough to beat Alabama. They've got a great offense. It's diverse. They've got great wide receivers, a great running back, as you say. And I actually think their defense is better than Alabama's as well. I think Alabama's offense is better and Georgia's defense is better. The question to me is which one is more better than the equivalent version on the other team. And I think Georgia, because Alabama can almost afford to lose this week, I could see a scenario where Georgia win this game close. And that to me would... I'm really at odds in my own mind as to whether I want that to happen or whether I want Oklahoma to get in just because I would like to see Kyler Murray versus Tua in a semi-final. Ooh. But it's going to be fascinating. Now, I just have a feeling Georgia are going to win this game this week, and then we'll see how the rest of it plays out from there.
How much would Georgia have to lose by for them to fall out of the top four?
I mean, if they lose, they're out for me.
Do you think even if they lose on a last-second field goal, 23-20... you know, in a great game and it's essentially the last team that gets the ball? Or if they lose in overtime?
I think they finish number five if that happens.
Interesting.
Because I don't think that Ohio State would necessarily leapfrog them, but I just think an Oklahoma team that would have avenged their only loss is difficult to keep out. It would be really harsh. I mean, yeah, and you could argue that Georgia have had every chance to just win one of those two games that they've lost.
Because ultimately, so, what you'd say is that Georgia would have lost to an LSU team who will finish in the top 10. Oklahoma lost to a Texas team who are currently ranked 14, and if they lose to Oklahoma again, might fall, let's say, to 15. So in terms of strength of schedule, Georgia's would have been better, and Georgia would have lost to the number one team. I suppose it'd be two lost Georgia at that point and one lost Oklahoma, wouldn't it? It's such a tough one, isn't it? Such a tough one to call.
It's tough. I think Oklahoma have got some better wins on their schedule, though. Like, I don't feel like Georgia have got... You know, West Virginia's a great win. I mean, I get that neither team can play defence, but that's a really, really good win, and I think it's better than Georgia's best win.
Let's get to Oklahoma against Texas. Fifth-ranked Oklahoma against the 14th-ranked Longhorns. It seems like the trash talk has started already. This game finished 43-40 earlier in the season. Cameron Dicker's 40-yard field goal at the end of the game after it looked like Texas put the game away, only for Kyler Murray and the Sooners to come roaring back late in the fourth quarter. At the podium yesterday at the press conference, Kyler Murray was reminded how much he said he'd respected Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa's game, which he reiterated. Then he was asked how much he respected the game of Texas quarterback Sam Ellinger. Murray apparently looked down, looked around, chuckled, and then said, "I've got no comment on that whatsoever." Last night, Ellinger, borrowing a phrase from his head coach, then posted on Twitter, "Okay, cool, hook 'em." He was then asked about the meaning of his tweet, was very coy about it, but it's kind of setting the tone for one of college football's most historic and most hostile, I suppose, rivalries out there, isn't it? Because this should be another absolute barn burner and a tough, hard-nosed slobber knocker of a game.
Yeah, and this is the one exception to... Well, there's two exceptions, these two games that we're talking about, to the rivalry weekend rule, because these are just awesome games, and you couldn't ask for any more than Texas-Oklahoma for everything. I mean, it's such a great rivalry. We never used to get the championship game here, and this is where I think it works for this one. I mean, Texas haven't been in this kind of game now for a long, long time, and that... Oklahoma, I mean, you forget Oklahoma have been in the playoffs more often than not since it started. Like, they're used to these games. And I wonder if that ultimately will be the difference because, you know, Texas really outplayed Oklahoma in the first meeting. I mean, it ended up being a close game. I remember that was the game, Si, that you turned off.
Ooh.
And I actually texted you and said, look, you need to get this game back on immediately because... it's gone crazy. Kyler Murray had that 90-odd yard touchdown run. And I would expect more of the same. It's going to be fireworks, exactly like we said with the West Virginia game last week. It's guaranteed fireworks. So just watch it and enjoy it. I think Oklahoma will win, but it is at the back of my mind that really Texas completely dominated them first time round. And actually, I feel like Texas can go up and down the field on Oklahoma every time in the way that basically any team can. But actually, Texas have a slightly better defense than... well, much better defense than Oklahoma, but also slightly better than your standard Big 12 defense. So I think Texas are more well-rounded, but ultimately Oklahoma win just because they're used to being in these big games.
Let's go to the ACC Championship game. On paper, it looks like a very comfortable win for number 2 Clemson against unranked Pittsburgh, who lost last week to Miami. But the history, I suppose, Matt, is littered with Pittsburgh's wild upsets and near upsets over the last sort of 10, 15 years, isn't it? I mean, you go back to, was it 2002 where they beat Virginia Tech, number three ranked Virginia Tech. Hokies were 8-0 when they visited them at the start of the season. They ended up losing 31-28. It was back in 2002. Got it in front of me now. They beat in 2003. Then they beat number five ranked Virginia Tech 31-28. In 2007, they beat number two ranked West Virginia 13-9. They beat number 10 ranked USF. They were unranked themselves 26-21 in 2008. They almost beat Notre Dame, fourth ranked Notre Dame. They lost in three overtimes in 2012. They beat Penn State in 2016. They beat Clemson.
Nearly beat Notre Dame this year.
And then in 2016, they beat third ranked Clemson 43-42. Last year, number two ranked Miami. They beat them by 10, 24-14 in Heinz Field. The history is littered, isn't it? Like you say, you almost beat Notre Dame this year. History is littered with Pittsburgh just showing up and getting huge, huge, you know, season-defining or season-changing wins, not just for them, but in terms of the whole shape of the national championship picture. They have almost been the bogey team for everybody that's been competing for a national championship over the past sort of 10, 12 years.
Yeah, and you could see them doing it again. I mean, I don't think they'll win, but I could see this being a game. I mean, last week's defeat looked awful against Miami, but they'd already sealed their place in the ACC Championship game. It's hard to know how much stock to put in that as a performance, because really, they were absolutely rolling before that point. I mean, after that Notre Dame game, they'd rattled off, I think, three or four straight wins, and they'd beat some decent teams within that as well, you know, Duke and Wake Forest are a decent team to beat on the road. I mean, so they'd racked up some good wins. I just think that they're one of those week-to-week proposition teams where, a bit like Purdue were against Ohio State, where, you know, if they fail it one week, they could do it. The only caveat to that is Trevor Lawrence is becoming everything that we have billed him as all year, Si. I mean, he gets better every single week, doesn't he? I feel like the guy we saw at the start of the season who looked very raw is very quickly turning into the guy we expected, and also the guy who has everybody excited. I mean, you know, it was interesting last week, a game where the Clemson defense, which has been incredible, they had their first down week in several weeks, and Lawrence really, really made up for that. I thought it was his best game of the season by a mile against South Carolina. I mean, not many teams, if you'd have told me before that game that South Carolina would put up 35 points, I'd have said, wow, that'll be a close game. Mm. Clemson put up 56. Trevor Lawrence put up the most yards that he's had yet in his career. So I mean, I'm desperate for Clemson to just get the job done because, you know, it's so exciting to watch Lawrence playing at this level, and you just want to see him across the field from the Kyler Murrays and the Tua Tagovailoas. I mean, that's what we want. But I would watch this game if I was from a neutral perspective, because Pitt are the kind of team who will make a game of it.
The interesting thing about Clemson is I think that they obviously will need to shut down Quadre Olison and Darren Hall, the two very good Pittsburgh running backs. And really running the ball was how Pittsburgh defeated Clemson a couple of years ago. The one concern I have for Clemson is their special teams. Looking at the numbers, their special teams are terrible. I mean, they have the number one ranked defense in the nation, the number six ranked offense. Their special teams are 88th in the country. In terms of special teams play, they are their offense is I think field position wise that they struggle with field position. They're a very hit and miss special teams unit, which is rare for a Clemson team. That could come back to haunt them when it comes down to the nitty gritty of looking further towards the playoff, assuming they get past Pittsburgh.
Could hurt them and Alabama, the two teams we've pointed it out on. You can't have bad special teams. That's one area where I think Georgia excel. Have got a really good kicker. And we're starting to get the point now where unless Alabama are literally the greatest college football team of all time, which is very possible, not ruling that out at all, but we are starting to get to the point where we're hitting games where it's those little difference makers that will ultimately determine who wins and loses. And yeah, absolutely, I feel like that's a thing that should be pointed out. Same with Bama. And I mean, one thing I'd pointed out about Michigan, for example, last week that really bit them hard against Ohio State was their red zone defense. So it's little things like that that maybe, you know, in the wider context of a big season, you don't notice because these teams usually roll over opponents every week that really can make the difference at this time of year.
Big Ten Championship, Ohio State against Northwestern. Buckeyes have won two of the last four Big Ten Championships, and they've dominated Northwestern in recent years. This, on paper, again, looks like a comfortable win for Ohio State, doesn't it? But then I suppose the question is which Ohio State shows up.
Based on last week.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, if it's the Ohio State that showed up in every game except for the Michigan game, then absolutely not. Like, I would say that Northwestern have every chance of beating them. The one thing I would say about Ohio State, and I hate to say this because I really don't like Ohio State for obvious reasons, is why I'd be interested almost in having them in a playoff is I just remember that season that they won the title, Meyer's only title at Ohio State. You know, nobody was looking at them. And it just feels like on the big game, they're the anti-Michigan, on the big game, in the big occasion, Urban Meyer is able to get his players to perform, and particularly his big players. I mean, Dwayne Haskins was awesome last week. I think of all the games where, you know, Percy Harvin was electric for Florida, or Tebow, you know. And that's why they are still a fascinating team, regardless of anything else. And also, similar to what I said about Georgia, Alabama, in that Georgia have the athletes, Ohio State have the athletes. And that's what we said all season, is it's weird to see Ohio State play like this because they've had all these great recruiting classes. They've been top three in recruiting basically since Meyer got there every single year. So, but this is exactly the kind of game, based on what we've seen this season, that they could lose. But what the only thing I think this week is, Urban knows that they need to win this game very, very, very convincingly and almost make a statement to the committee. Was it Wisconsin last year that did the same thing too?
Yeah.
Where they absolutely blew them off the field.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, they did the same to Michigan last week. So they could easily do that again. And if they do that, then it becomes an interesting conversation between them and Oklahoma.
Let's flip to the West Coast, the Pac-12 championship game, Washington against Utah. Again, on paper, you'd say that Washington would be the favourite, especially with the injuries that Utah have had, specifically to running back Zach Moss. Although, to be fair, Armand Shine has stepped in and done really well, 174 yards rushing against Oregon. The play of Jason Shelley, who's played the last three games instead of Tyler Huntley. But I think the loss of Moss should be enough to see Washington over the line, especially with the way that Myles Gaskin is playing, because he went off big last week, didn't he, in the victory over Washington State.
Yeah, I think Washington will win this game fairly comfortably. I mean, last week's game was Washington's Big 12 championship game for me, going into Pullman and beating Washington State, which is, I was disappointed about that as I was about Michigan, to be honest. But yeah, I think Washington have, you know, it's been another good season. It's the kind of been the classic Chris Peterson season with maybe an extra loss. I mean, they seem to just win a lot of games, but never the biggest of the big games, except for their in-state rivalry game. So yeah, another good season for Washington, but this is what we're getting at. I mean, I've never had less juice for big conference games than I maybe do this one, the Big Ten game and the ACC game. As much as I think the ACC is the most interesting of the other three with Pitt, but yeah, I think Washington will win this fairly comfortably.
Darryl Mack will take over at quarterback for Mackenzie Milton in the AAC Championship game against Memphis, a game that UCF, regardless of who's at quarterback, should comfortably win. Mack played very well, actually, when Milton went down last week, had a 70-yard touchdown run, is a dangerous runner. He's obviously not he's not Mackenzie Milton, I don't think many people are, but he's clearly got a good college football future in front of him. Do you think he has enough to take them past, you know, a very average Memphis side, you know, apart from Darrell Henderson?
He should do. I mean, the one thing to remember, though, is that Memphis are the one team who really nearly beat UCF during the regular season.
Yeah.
I think it was like a 3-point game or something, if I remember rightly. So, in fact, it was a 1-point
game. It was 1-point
game,
31-30, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I would think so. And I really want UCF to finish unbeaten now, especially for Milton. I mean, that was one of the worst injuries I've ever seen.
It was 62-55 last year as well, wasn't it, in the ACC, AAC title
game. They've consistently
overtime.
Played them pretty tough, Memphis. So I think this could actually, from a game perspective, be really interesting to watch. But it's just so disappointing. I mean, and disappointing for next season as well, because we'd already kind of set the table for Milton to be there again for one last season. And that really takes away one of the exciting storylines, because I don't think he's ever going to play football again.
No.
I mean, by the sounds of it, he was lucky to keep his leg. So, it's a bit of disappointment, but hopefully for him and for everybody else, UCF can finish off a second unbeaten season.
Yeah, if you didn't hear, Milton had obviously essentially a traumatic right knee injury, didn't he? But also had nerve damage, had serious blood flow issues. His family released a statement. He took a helmet to the knee in the second quarter of the game. I mean, I would advise strongly against not looking at the photographs if you want to keep your dinner inside you. But he underwent emergency surgery, didn't he, to repair the blood flow issue on Friday night, but is going to have then reconstructive surgery to repair his knee at a later date. The family said that his blood flow had been restored to his right leg. The nerve is very seriously injured but intact. McKenzie is recovering and healing, is receiving the very best medical care possible. At a later date, he will have reconstructive surgery to repair his knee. I mean, it reminds me, it's slightly reminiscent of the injury that Jalen Smith suffered for Notre Dame in the bowl game. Now he's kind of back to looks to be close to the form that he showed really 3 years ago, wasn't it, when he was in college before the injury with which he very seriously damaged knees, ligaments, but also had an issue with blood flow and the nerves. Huge shame for Milton, huge shame for UCF, but I think they'll probably get past Memphis on this sort of down conference championship weekend. That is it for this week. We shall be back next week. Don't forget Clancy on Campus. Don't forget the video, which will be out tomorrow, where you'll be able to see me looking tired and exhausted and talking about the three best games to look out for, but also why I think certain teams will beat others. Any more, Matthew?
Just that it's good to have Mac Brown back. That's going to be
fun. Yeah, of course. Mac Brown at North Carolina. I think somebody had a list of stuff that the last time Mac Brown was at UNC, what was going on in the world. And it was a very different world to the one that we live in now, where I think, was Tua Tagovailoa even born when Mac Brown was at UNC? I don't think he
probably
was.
Probably not. I wouldn't have thought so.
Scary. Right. Thanks for listening. We shall be back next week. Don't forget ESPN Player, your home of college football. 700 plus live games throughout the season. The on-demand system is great. If you're looking for NFL prospects, and this is a good time of year to do it, as the kind of the bowl games ramp up, and you want to kind of, if you've not been following it all the way through, get back on the on-demand system and have a look at some of the players out there, quarterbacks like Drew Locke and Easton Stick at North Dakota State, and some of the interesting guys. And then a whole raft of documentaries from the 30 for 30 catalogue, which will keep you occupied throughout the cold winter evenings. ESPNU, the SEC Network, the Longhorn Network, so much to go out, so much programming. I mean, I was watching Florida State women's football team, the soccer team, the other day, which was for about half an hour, which was fascinating. You can watch all of that on ESPN Player. We shall be back next week. Thanks to Matthew. I am Simon. Goodbye. There you go.
What are you up to this weekend?
Hello, you're listening to the Horse Ramble Daily, where we'll be covering all of your horse needs. And there's more. Every day during the Cheltenham Festival, Betway are giving you the chance to win £50,000 in the free-to-play or to win game. Head to betway.com to play now. Up next, more horses. Horse, horse, horse. Horse, 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 horse. Full terms apply. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org.
Hey, football fans. Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.